Hello and welcome. Scare Track. Scare Track Podcast.
Welcome to the Scare Track Podcast, the UK's first podcast dedicated to the scare attraction and haunted house industry. However, please be advised that we have no censor. The language used may be of an explicit nature and is not intended for younger listeners or the easily offended. All views expressed are those of the individual host and do not necessarily reflect those of Scare Track, our guests, or any of our associates. So, if you're still here, let's get scared.
So this is where our adventure begins.
Oh my God!
I'm scared myself!
Kate Monroe is screaming. Spoiler alert, freaking awesome.
The
quality of the set was amazing.
Hello and welcome to this movie review episode of the Scare Track Podcast. My name is Mikey, and of course, because it's a movie review episode, I am joined by Dan Brownlee from UK Haunters, a guest host here on the Scare Track Podcast. So the movie we are reviewing today is Willy's Wonderland, a brand new action horror with a dash of comedy in there as well. Featuring and starring Nicolas Cage. Now, Hannah loves it because she loves Nicolas Cage. But myself, Hannah, Dan, Jess, we all really, really love this film. It was really awesome, really intense, just action-packed. And although it's not a haunt horror genre, and we mentioned this in the review, it does fit in with the kind of films that we enjoy really, really well. Absolute blast. We are going to spoil it. There's lots of spoilers in here, so check it out first. Press pause and go and check out Willy's Wonderland. You can get it in the UK now, 48-hour rental, but it is coming out for purchase in a couple of months' time as well. So, yeah, really awesome film. Really enjoyed it. So let's take you straight to it. It's mine and Dan's review of Willy's Wonderland.
You're listening to Scare Track.
Hi folks, and welcome back to this episode of the Scare Track Podcast. Like I said in the intro, it is the return of the movie reviews, and because it's a movie review episode, of course I'm joined once again by Dan Brownlee. Dan, how's it going, buddy?
Oh, good. All good. Especially since your little post, which I stole and reposted, has given me light to the Halloween tunnel this year.
Yes, definitely. We just shared today on the social media pages that Fear Fields is presenting Psychopath, the April walkthrough. April. We're getting a haunt in April. That's pretty cool, isn't it?
Now, there's no way I can get to you. As you're saying, it's like 2 hours from where you are, so about 5 hours from where I am. So it's not that I'll be able to get to it, but the fact that it's going ahead, it's just... Yeah. It's like when they talk about extinction, they say you may never meet a lion, but it's nice to know that lions exist in the world. It's the same thing with haunt. There's a haunt in 2021. Oh my God, thank you.
Yes, definitely. I'm very excited about it. It should be the first haunt of the year as well, because it's all outdoors. It's like a walkthrough experience rather than going into scare mazes. For example, Scare Kingdom have recently changed their date of their wall purges event from May to, I think, early July, because of course that's indoors. It might be June. I'll double check that. The fact that we're getting an outdoor sort of walkthrough style scare experience in April is, yeah, pretty cool. And looking at it, it seems that we might be having a far more normal scare season this October as well.
Mm-hmm.
Fingers crossed, anyway. And if we are, we're going to go and do shitloads of haunts, Dan.
We are going to do shitloads of haunts, because I haven't done a serious UK haunt season yet, because I was doing a documentary discovering it all. Mm-hmm. Then the next year I was all working on the post, and then bloody COVID hit. So I think the year before I managed to get some in, but there's loads I wanted to do. So I just discovered all these. So I haven't actually had a full on, no prep on projects, just clear run of UK haunts, and hopefully that'll be this year.
Yeah, fingers crossed, definitely, definitely. And then we'll be able to do some more collab episodes when it comes to this scare season. And like we say, we just hope that attractions and theatres and immersive experiences, all that stuff starts kicking back super soon. But today's episode, like I said in the intro, is a movie review episode. And me and Dan are going to give you our thoughts and our review, our discussion on Willy's Wonderland, a brand new action comedy horror with Nicolas Cage. Bloody loved it. Before we get into it, spoilers ahead. And although there's very similarities with a certain game, we're going to definitely be mentioning throughout this episode as well. As far as I'm aware, they're completely separate IPs. But two that I now really, really love. Dan, let's go straight into it. Willy's Wonderland... freaking awesome, right?
It's your birthday, one. You have fun. That's all I'm saying. I think this is worth precursoring this. This is the first non-haunt horror we're reviewing.
Good point, actually. Good point. Yeah, we're very much focused on the haunt horror subgenre, and this one is not. You can kind of it uses animatronics to scare people. There's some very loose ties into it, but yeah, you're right. Yeah. It's not a haunt horror.
It is haunt horror adjacent. It's not a haunt horror, but it's goddamn close.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean? It's really, it is very close. It is, yes, I mean, this would make a perfect haunt. I pray someone in the UK where I can get to does this or haunt this year.
Yes, 100%. Just the whole, all the characters, the aesthetic, theme, like it would just work so, so well. So a little bit of info of what sort of Willy's Wonderland is, in case you haven't checked it out, guys. Like I say, if you want to go into the film completely spoiler-free, stop now and check this episode out later. But guys...
go check it out.
Like... yeah. Yeah,
if you haven't watched it anyway, watch it now. It's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Press pause. Go watch the film now. But it's basically said a quiet drifter is tricked into a janitorial job at a now condemned Willy's Wonderland. The mundane tasks suddenly become an all-out fight for survival against wave after wave of demonic animatronics. I mean, that's just awesome in a can, isn't it? That's just. It just beautiful. Works so well. Dan mentioning, guys, to go and watch it. I think I rented it off YouTube. Dan, how did you watch it?
I rented it off Amazon.
Sweet. So it was on... I couldn't find it when I went online, but...
I think it was about
$6.99 for 48 hours. Yeah.
That's the one. I watched it twice.
I wish I had, you know. I wish I had, even within those 2 days. Yeah, definitely, because it was... it was a really cool, fun film, but it was also one that's just mega easy to digest. You know, there's not... yeah. Talking about the main character of Nicolas Cage, he actually doesn't say a word throughout the whole film.
I actually listened to an interview with the director today.
Oh, good.
It was... I've got little bits of facts for it. Not a huge lot. But he was actually... he had one line in the script... and they said, if you've got one line, it's got to be so powerful and so amazing. And they decided that it was just better if he didn't, because when he said that one line, everyone go, oh, that's the line we're waiting for. But a lot of what this film does is flip it, everything on its head.
Yeah.
And because of the way he's called the janitor, the way the janitor, the character's called the janitor, the way the janitor acts, Nicolas Cage was saying... he'd only really speak if he felt he had to speak. Even if there's something he could only say with words.
Yeah.
And the thing is, he doesn't need to. Nothing is... everything is completely... and even the things that make no sense work in this. So yes. There's nothing he needed to say to convey what he was thinking, and therefore he didn't say anything. And I was like, fair goddamn play to you.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. It's a film that's just... it's thought out the box a little bit, really, isn't it? Because like you said, there's bits that don't really make sense, but because it's this film, they do. It's fair enough. You're just happy to go with every... just with what he's doing, you know.
Yeah, nonsense.
Yeah, it's kind of nonsense, and it just sort of... But it's because it's so entertaining and thrilling and you know, there's some proper good jump scares in there as well. It's just overall just fun. So those things where you go, hang on, why the hell on bang on the hour is he having a soda? Or why is he playing? Well, and there we go. Dan will tell us exactly why.
I have logics for that.
And I suppose that is kind of similar to, and we'll get onto it in a little bit as well, the game with the Friday Nights at Freddy's game. There's definitely huge similarities. But go on then, Dan. Why does he have soda?
Throughout the conversation with the director, I found it exceptionally funny that it was a 2-hour interview. And I'm surprised I got so little out of this, apart from some really dark shit. Like, apparently, the director was dying of COVID when this got released.
Wow.
Like, he's alive now, when I say dying, but he was messed up. Wow. He said, like, I was in the hospital hearing people saying goodbye to their loved ones next to me. I was calling my wife and kids every day. And like, he was bad.
Bloody
like,
hell.
He had to fight for it. And then came out of it. And I think that kind of, like, took away a lot of the fun facts from the film that I remember. Because I thought, wow, man, that's dark. And even funny enough, the tagline, I'm not sure if it's the official tagline or if it's going to change, but the tagline on the poster is 2020 isn't over yet, kids. Well played.
Nice.
But anyway, but the thing was, my point was, so I completely sidetracked, is that in fact, it's a 2-hour interview. Mm-hmm. As far as I can remember, the interviewers or him never, ever mentioned Five Nights at Freddy's. And I was just like, is that because they are playing it so... Now, Five Nights at Freddy's had their goddamn chance. The Banana Splits came out, which is a lesser film, amazing film, not as good as this, but the same sort of obscure animatronic, kids animatronics go wild and kill things. Right. That came out, Five Nights at Freddy's didn't pick up the ball. They left it years and years ago, and this came out. So I'm not sure if they didn't mention Five Nights at Freddy's because it is so close to the bone that they don't want to get people going, oh shit, they did rip it off. Maybe Five Nights at Freddy's people hadn't realised, but they had their goddamn chance and they just didn't pick up the ball. These people did. So Five Nights at Freddy's, for those who don't know the game, you have to survive five nights at a pizzeria, Chuck E. Cheese-esque thing, which means bugle to people who don't know much about American culture, but essentially where it's kind of like Pizza Hut with animatronic animals.
Yeah.
And where kids go to the party. In Five Nights at Freddy's, you have to survive five nights doing manual janitorial tasks as these things are trying to kill you. And throughout the night, it goes in hour breaks, and I think there's like 6 hours.
Yeah,
and
so every you've got to get hour, from 12 to 6 a.m.
Yeah, so every hour is a break. I genuinely honestly believe that he has that break every hour because there's lots of visual homages. I think that is one of the many, many, many homages, nods, winks, whatever you want to 5 Nights at Freddy's because it is just too... Because the gameplay stops. If you think the film's gameplay, the gameplay stops.
Yeah.
So, and again, we are going to spoil the shit out of this. So before I really ruin it for you, I beg you, please go watch it. It's a fantastic, fantastic, hilarious film. So even to the point where he's about to fight one of the animatronics and he goes beep, 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 and he stops and has his break. And I was like, that's got to be, that has got to be a nod to Five Nights at Freddy's. It actually has to be.
Definitely. Especially when... there's a girl there as well that he's just fought off one animatronic, I think. He's about to fight off another. He's there with a poor girl, and he's helped defend her so far. But all of a sudden, when it's time for his break, it's time for his fucking break. He's going. It's time for his break. So he just walks off. And like Dan was saying earlier, that's one of those moments that shouldn't really make sense. But because you've been watching the film, you know that every hour it beeps. He has a pop, like an energy pop. He plays a bit of pinball. That's his break, basically. You know, I was chatting to Hannah about this earlier, and again, although they don't mention Five Nights at Freddy's at all, you know, every time you have to basically, you hit an hour, that is kind of his kind of pop. But also, he also had to have a break. Now, that could be similar to the fact that you have to, in the game, take breaks from looking at the cameras because otherwise you'll run the battery out and you'll inevitably die because you're not able to check it. So, you know, there's certain links and you can make as many theories as you want that him going to the pinball machine is him taking a break away from his role or, you know, beating up the animatronics. Likewise, you could... say that his you know, think of this as a computer game. Well, if you were the controller controlling Nicolas Cage, the janitor, if you start getting beat up and hurt and he tapes himself up and whatnot. What do you normally do? If you're Crash Bandicoot, you hit a box and you've got a Booga Booga Man to give you an extra life. If you're Sonic, you get 100 rings, you get an extra life. Well, if you're Nicolas Cage, you have one of these sort of energy soda cans to rejuvenate yourself during the break on the pinball machine. So it does. It is. If you get into your head, this is a game. The movie just flows really well like that, doesn't it?
I mean, they have to get in head this game. I think is just it's very good at getting you to buy in.
Yes.
To the reality to points where you just go, you know, cool. I watched it with Jess, who loves to pick holes in films because she likes. Oh, wow, is that it? And then she was like, "Yeah, fair enough. Okay, I buy that.
I'm the guy that was picking faults with Hellfest, and I've learnt my lesson. I'm sorry, but there's me saying X, Y, and Z, and now you know I've come to learn to sort of just let things sort of be. But I'm still quite picky sometimes. But this film, just on the get go, you're like, okay, so he's a guy. He's not going to talk. He's going to drink pop. He's going to play that and kill these guys if they try and kill him. Okay,
and also the fact that he doesn't speak for some reason,
just works.
That as a filmmaker, I'd love to get my head around, just gives him the right to do this. Like if he was a speaky character, you go, "Oh, an explanation." Because he doesn't, you kind of go, "All right, cool." You know what I mean, because he's not blurbing out explanation all the time for, "Oh my god, these things are trying to kill us. This, that, and the other." He gives us no verbal explanation. We accept more of just what he does randomly.
Yeah. Yeah, you totally
do. Yeah. Just let him... it's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, and I don't know whether it's hard. Like Nick, I'm going to sidebar a little bit here, but Nicolas Cage is a funny one in our house because Hannah and her entire family love Nicolas Cage. Hannah and her family just love Nicolas Cage. So whenever we're watching something Nicolas Cage, anyway, I'm watching it with a bit of a smirk, a bit of a smile, because I can just see how happy Hannah is, you know, even at the end of knowing it was bloody aliens. But that's another story. terrible ending. So there is that. But I just think, you know, despite of it being Nicolas Cage, it was just played really cool. It was played like you just thought he was a bit of a badass and you sort of liked it when he was killing these like animatronics. I really like as well that it wasn't like he'd do it and nuts and bolts would come out. It's like a real slick black oil would come out, and it really gave the impression that that's their blood.
This is one thing. This film's all about flipping shit on its head. There's a line, I mean, it's spoiling anyway, but it doesn't matter. But it's in the trailer, and they put it in the trailer. He's not trapped in there with him. He's not trapped near them. They're trapped near him. And that is a logic it goes by, because he plain Fs them up. It's the reverse of a slasher.
Yeah. Yeah.
Until the other characters come in who get killed. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. You need a bunch of victims. I'm all good for that. And you know, they're pretty much all going to die. And I'm like, yep, completely happy with that. But he's the slasher. The evil possessed things are coming after him and he's picking them off one by one. And again, it just flips on its head. And I was like, amazing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. It flips it all on its head, but it also just has, like you say, you had to get some deaths in there. They had to kill those kids and whatnot. They did also conform to just what you expect in a horror as well, and like an action horror. There's blood as such. There is blood when it comes to them, but like I say, the oil sort of plays like their blood. It is very impactful. It's gruesome to a point. They killed a couple during a sex scene. Like, that's because in horror films, there's, you know, those old school horror films, there's always a sex scene and then, you know, someone gets a knife in the back, or, you know, it's happened in so many films. They sort of, to me, it seemed like they were like, yep, this we're going to do exactly what a horror does, yet flipping it on its head.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. And also, like, his kills, they're slasher kills.
Yeah.
He rips someone's spine out. Is the way to, it's an animatronic spine, but it's got the splash of vomit. If that had been the film where animatronics was attacking people and someone managed to fight one off and they disabled it, they'd have just broken the animatronic. Because he's the slasher, there is, quote unquote, blood everywhere. Yeah. And gore everywhere, but it's animatronic spines and stuff, but they're still slasher kills. Definitely. He doesn't just kill them, he slasher kills them.
Yeah, and they're all still quite, even though it is animatronics and it's parts from a machine, it's still kind of gruesome in that way, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. I loved it.
And then he has to change his shirt.
And the, that's another thing as well. Like, you could argue that every time he has to change his shirt, every time he sort of kills one, you could argue that every time he's changed a shirt, that's the next hour counting down on the clock. The fact that he's had his pop, he's had a game, and he's changed his shirt, and he's killed a animatronic, that's sort of like, hour one done, level one done, then hour two is level two, hour three, and then just like all computer games, you get the big bad boss right at the end. And that's the same thing that happened with this one.
I would love to hear. I heard the interview with the director and how he got this job was fascinating. He basically did a really, really shit film. he says shit films. It's not. I hate people slagging off films. Does my nothing. Because who do you need a fucking slag off art? But back in like years and years and years ago, it was called like Malibu Beach Party. And he said he wrote it in 2 days, filmed it in five, and it was awful. But he did such a good job directing it. The ones the actors on it, this was 20, 15 years ago, whatever it was, came across his script and went, I know just the guy to do this. And literally contacted him and said, hey, man, I've got this script. You're the first guy I thought of because he, you know, treated actors well 15 years ago. That's me, all bloody tape. But I'd love to hear from the writer. Because I've heard from the director, and the director obviously has a ton of input. But if the script was like, he takes breaks every day, if the script was the one that enforced all the Five Nights at Freddy's thing. Now, he did mention it, which I found weird, as I've mentioned before, and the interviewers didn't mention it, but I'm wondering if that's because it was just like, that was the script it got given. I'd like to hear from the writers, to see if the writers were like, oh yeah, yeah, no, that's, you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
There were so many specific Five Nights at Freddy's franchise games, there are scenes that I saw in this and went, that's a nod to that, that's a nod to that. I'd really love to hear from the writers to go, was it? Because, you know, how much, it must have been, it must have been influenced somehow, but how much? Was it a homage? Or was it a, let's take this rough idea and run with it? You know, how much was there brain working on it?
Yeah, definitely. I'd also, as well, like to hear the opposite side. I'd like to see or hear what the game makers of Five Nights at Freddy's thought potentially about this. Or, like, you know, because they, again, I wouldn't say they're trying to, you know, they're not trying to take each other's fans or anything like that. This isn't like a WCW versus WWF sort of thing. It's you know, people who are going to like one thing are going to like this, and it's a movie and it's a game. But I am intrigued to think what you know, Scott's Games, the people who made Five Nights at Freddy's, what their thoughts are behind it. Are they thinking they've literally just copied everything of us? Are they kind of happy they've done it? Are they kind of pissed off that, like you said earlier, that they didn't make the film themselves? I think it'd be quite, that would be a cool room to be a fly on the wall in, the writers and directors of Willy's Wonderland and the creators of Five Nights at Freddy's. I think that would be a pretty cool conversation to people.
The Five Nights at Freddy's people, if they've got any goddamn sense, they would take this as a good sign that their film will sell and they should try and get funding for it. Because that's what happens. Like when people go like, people always snobby about fucking everything. They're really pissing me off. But lots of people get snobby about the horror in the horror scene. Oh, stop the remakes. Blah, no more remakes. The more, if they're remaking horror is still bankable. Therefore, more horror films will get made.
Yes.
So as long as horror's being made, as long as this sort of film's being made and out there and doing well, then the Five Nights at Freddy's people should go, well, look, if that's doing well and that's our sort of brand, then, you know, we should, you know, it makes it more easier to get money and pitch it, to go, look, Willy's Wonderland did gangbusters. You know, we've got worldwide known property. Let's do our own version of it. You know, do it creepier, do it this, do it that. But it should be a good thing if it does well. If it doesn't do well at all, I don't see why it wouldn't, then yeah, it's a bad thing. But if it does well, it should actually help them if they play the cards right.
Yeah, definitely. And it's something that I could just really imagine seeing. That'd be a pretty cool film to go to at the cinema, wouldn't it? You know, Five Nights at Freddy's, I'm quite late to the game. Me and Hannah only actually played it for the first time a couple of nights ago. And if you want to see how scared we are, check out the Scare Cam on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/scaretrack. It considering it's a, you know, computer, you know, cartoon graphic style game, it's freaking terrifying. Oh, it's so scary, but so good. And so it, the scariness lies in its simplicity. But yeah, I really do think the fact that this...
Good.
Sorry?
It's so good. I didn't throw my iPad across the room. It leapt out of my hands. Yes. I didn't sort of jump up and go, ah! It literally, my wrist just flicked it out of the way. Like my brain went, fuck this shit. And I didn't even realise I did it. It was so scary. My brain went, get away from me. And I literally just flicked it away and was like, where the fuck my iPad goes?
You know what? The amount of times I nearly kicked the camera off, like I say, we were filming it, kicked the camera off the tripod, honestly, it just... I just imagine playing that game in VR would really send you to some sort of hospital.
F that shit. Yeah.
Definitely.
The thing is, I love the mythology of the game. I just can't... I hate those one-touch kill games.
Yes, yeah.
Three sections into that night, bah, you jump, you scream, and you're right back, and you've got to do another... I don't mind the scares, but then you've got a second to, like, you know, maybe you've got three hits you die. You can kind of like scrabble to run past something or get something together. But I hate that one hit die. That's the thing that really bugs me about the games, because I love the art. I love the mythology so much. Like, I've got the toys of it. I mean, I've read little articles on, apparently they've got a book out, and I'm like, oh, the mythology, it's amazing. I just can't. I hate that one touch and you're dead mechanic. So if they did a film of that.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. 100%. I'm just checking out. Now I know you shouldn't believe everything you read online, but there is apparently talks of a sequel. In an interview, Gio Parsons stated that if the film gets enough support, a sequel would be made. And then in February, this month, literally recently, it was confirmed that a sequel is in development.
Wow.
Which is quick.
See, that thing is, I am a humongous fan of Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Yes.
Which is the best film ever created by man. Does Animal or God create a film? Anyway, I strangely digress into theological mind. I shouldn't do on a podcast that I have no business opening my mouth on. But for years, and this has got a point, I know I'm going a little bit sideways at a point, and for years it's like, Killer Clowns from Outer Space 2, I read a sample script, so the first 15 pages, I lost my shit, nothing happened. Then they released a bunch of toys, and everyone's got fright rags do t-shirts, and Cavity Colors do t-shirts, and these t-shirts. And I was like, yeah, it's going to happen, it didn't. And then Halloween Horror Nights had a scare zone, which next year turned into a house, and I read I listened to an interview with the guy who did the score, was like, yeah, the Kyoto brothers are like, oh, yeah, it's going to go. Nothing. So I, as much as it fills my heart with joy that they might do a Willy's Wonderland sequel, until I see something, I'm just not putting it. Because Killer Clowns, I keep them here, definite. Because film is so full of landmines. It's literally like stumbling drunk through a minefield and praying you don't step on something to blow up your project. So I'd love it. I would love it, but I don't get excited about anything till it comes forward, because just so often goes wrong.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. I'm similar with, again, sidebarring just a little bit, but the Terminator franchise. Now, people are going to be rolling their eyes because they've made sequel after sequel after sequel, but the first, I think it was Terminator Salvation, was supposed to be a start of a new trilogy. Then it failed, so they scrapped it. Genesis was supposed to be start of a new trilogy. It failed, so they scrapped it. Then they've just made the newest one, which, in my opinion, failed, so they're probably going to scrap it again. But every time they've tried to reboot it, it's always supposed to be a trilogy, and they sort of... the films are okay-ish, I guess. Nothing compared to the original two, which I think are two of the best films ever. But they still give those sort of, you know, hints to a different style of story, or there's some new plots that you, even though didn't really enjoy the film, you kind of want to see where they go to in number two and three. I still don't know who the hell that Matt Smith character is in Terminator Genesis, and we never will. But my point is that they bombed, they didn't make as much money as they hoped, and at the moment it doesn't look like, although we love the film, that Willy's Wonderland made as much money as they'd hoped. Yet, anyway. If that makes sense.
But it's the same thing with Hellfest. I was listening to... John, bug me. Was it the guy who did Dog Soldiers was meant to do Hellfest originally? I'll have to go back to the episode.
I can't remember.
But again, that was... They were like, yeah, that was... That was, if that made money, and that's the thing now, which it makes sense, I suppose, yeah. If it makes money, it'll sequelise. But they just don't... They just didn't make enough money, or it was a flop according to Hollywood, where if it only made 10 times, not 20 times, it's a flop. Same thing as Haunt as well. I mean, they always found fantastic films, and they just, you kind of want more of them.
Yes, yeah, but, definitely. And this, to me, seems like a film that's going to... It already says, like I'm reading up as well, even before it was released, the film kind of went when it was in... It was in a sort of post-production. People were already developing a little bit of a cult following for it. And I think this is going to be one of them.
The T-shirts sold out before the film was released. Literally, I watched the film with Jess, and I was like, how long until Fright Rags does a T-shirt? And Jess is a little internet hound. And she was like, Dan, they have an official website and they're sold out of every size already. I mean, watch Willy's Wonderland the day it was available. Maybe it was available slightly early in America, but like sold out of every single size.
Mad. That's that. So again, it shows that the audience is definitely there. And I think the fans are going to, again, it's still quite new. It's only recently come out. The fans are going to enjoy it more than the critics. It's going to be one of those films. You know, looking at Rotten Tomatoes, and the fans have rated it higher. It's definitely, yeah, going to be one of those films where the fans drive it over Hollywood, for sure. A bit like, you know, probably a little bit different, but Rocky Horror Picture Show, when that came out, that completely bombed for ages. And now it's got one of the biggest, you know, cult style followings ever, and I'm hoping Willy's Wonderland will be the same, because I want a t-shirt. I'll be honest, I want one of them t-shirts.
Not only do I there's a thing I hope with these sort of things, the same as I hope with Haunt Horrors, I hope they become their own subgenre, mm-hmm. enough that people see that sort of film and go, I want to do that sort of film.
Yes.
So there's more Haunt Horrors, there's more animatronic horrors. I mean, I want it to become a thing.
Yes.
Like, it get popular enough that other filmmakers start go, or script writers sort of go, oh man, I want to do that. I want to do a haunted horror. I want to do a killer animatronic horror. I really hope this becomes a thing, because I love them. There are really, really like Full Moon films, old Full Moon films, like Puppet Master, Demonic Toys 2, blah, 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 because it's this level. Now, they're all relatively cheaply done. I won't call them bad movies, but that's how they kind of described a lot of them. I think they're fantastic movies. Mm-hmm. But they just got this, it's got an element, they're not really that bothered about the jump scares, they're just there for horror fun.
Yeah, yeah.
I fucking love that. Love that so much. And that's the Willy's Wonderlands and the Haunts and the Hellfest. All right, a lot more polish, a lot bigger budgets, but they kind of have that same spirit of, we're just here to entertain you horror wise. Mm-hmm. And I really want more of those. I love the ones like The Witch. I love it when you have, and I hate the phrase elevated horror, where they go deep and intelligent and integral and you've got a thing and it haunts you. I love those sort of ones as well, and I think when they're done great, they're great. But I just, my meat and potato or my donuts and coffee are these sort of just fun ones, and I just want more of them.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. People who have listened to this for a while know full well that although I do Scare Track, I love scary sort of rides and attractions and mazes. When it comes to scary movies, I'm still a newbie and I'm a wuss. So, but yeah, doing these movie reviews with you, looking into the more horror haunt subgenre films again, which are kind of, you know, kind of scary, kind of gory, kind of funny, just that whole mixture just makes for just for an entertaining film. I'd rather be scared and laugh rather than scared and not be able to sleep. So that's why these films, I think, go hand in hand with you know, why we enjoy haunts as well, that we don't want to be terrified, we don't want to, you know, be traumatized by them, but we want to go in, get scared, have a laugh, and enjoy the rest of the night.
literally said what I was about to say. I treat films the way I do haunts. That's exactly what I was about to say. I do this very, very scary ones every now and then, and I appreciate them, but I want to go in, have fun, appreciate the art, appreciate the dynamics, the animatronics, the way things look, the colours, the lights, the smells, and that's the same thing in film. I want to look at it and go, that's shot well, they're interesting characters, I like the gore, but yeah, it's that sort of enjoyment factor for me rather than getting just mind ploughed.
Yeah.
Which is, I like that more in horror than I do. I mean, I'm not a great personal fan of attending extreme haunts, but I do like extreme horror more than I do extreme haunts. But my main thing is that just sort of, I want to appreciate it. I want to go, yeah.
Yes.
That was solid, man. And this film was solid. There is not an ounce of fat on it.
No, I 100% agree. Yes. And the runtime, I think, is 88 minutes as well, just under an hour and a half. And yeah, like you say, not an ounce of fat. It is just everything in it was perfect. It was just awesome. Like, I'm gutted I don't own it. It's a shame it was only up for rent. I'm sure that'll change moving forward. But
oh, sir, not only did I watch it twice, I also pre-ordered it as soon as I watched it. It is available to pre-order on Amazon Prime.
Perfect. There we go, guys. So pre-order it as well.
Tell you when it's coming out for dear listeners who are curious. Let me check my orders. It is coming out on 24th of April.
Winner. Okay, so a couple of months. Break. 2 months today.
Yeah.
As of time of recording.
That's why I watched it again. I was like, I can't wait 2 months to see this film again. So I'm gonna. I've got it for 48 hours. I shall watch it again.
Definitely, definitely. And it's going to be one I think that I'll just... I have a selection of films that I'll just watch, just put it on. Like, again, like if you can't think of something new or you're not too sure what to watch, I have you sort of have your selection of go-to films. I think this is going to be added to my selection of go-to films for sure. Definitely.
I also think this is going to be part of my haunt horror yearly marathon. I think it's going to fit quite well into that.
Yeah.
Along with Hellfest and that sort of thing. It really is a spiritual haunt film.
It is, definitely.
It's a spiritual goddamn haunt film.
And it needs to be made into a scare attraction, definitely. Or anyone listening, Five Nights at Freddy's attraction, this style of attraction, or, you know what, take your own spin on it. Like, We use animatronics in haunts anyway, especially here in the UK. We're definitely using more and more than we used to. You guys over in the States using huge, awesome animatronics. I say someone make them fluffy teddy bears. Let's do it. Why do they have to be Grim Reapers and zombies and witches? Yeah. Let's
love that sort. That's what I said about the Full Moon stuff. Yeah. It's all killer toys.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? It'd be so much cool.
Although, funny enough, I did actually go to a Five Nights at Freddy's haunt in Vegas a few years ago.
Oh, wow. How was that?
So they had fun. It was cool. The only trouble is that even back then, I got some of how haunts work and just like, go in front of me. And I was like, no, you go in front of me. No. So the fact is, they don't think I'm the brave one, so they won't get me. They'll get you, and I want the scares.
Yeah.
So anyway, so they wouldn't let me go, but they made me go in front. And when I went in front, they all come out at the end, but they all came out just behind me.
Right.
To get the scaredy cats growing up behind me. And I was like, oh, man.
You're missing the scares.
I sort of saw them run around that, and it was cool, but they didn't jump in my face. So it was cool, but yeah, I much prefer to say better experience.
Yeah, no, that's understandable, definitely. Yeah. And hoping as well, since this COVID year, when every haunt that I went in, it was literally with my quote-unquote little bubble, smaller groups are just so much better for that sort of thing. So I know it'll be different this year if we are back to more of a normal season, but I'm hoping that some parks saw that potentially with slightly less capacities, they can still make the money on secondary spends, that sort of thing.
It's like going to Halloween Horror Nights. We got the RIP thing where the chuck them a label of mine and you go to the front of the queue, essentially. And it was cool that you didn't have to queue, but right in front of us were the bunch of little girls. And I say little, I mean, I'm 44, so they're, you know, teenagers. And I was like, oh, because they're all going to jump out at them.
Yeah, basically,
because
yeah.
they want to get the scares, and they won't go the big 6'4" donk behind them. So I got like the aftershock of everything, and then by the time, and then they reset for me and the people behind me, and I was like, oh. So there's another tip: if there's a group of young girls, just hold back.
That, yeah, I was always trying to sort of hold back and just go slightly slower. When I went to Halloween Horror Nights, and I was always, again, we're sidebarring slightly, but I'll mention this just before we come to the end of the episode. I was quite anxious about Halloween Horror Nights with missing scares and things like that, because it's such a conga line, you know, so many people go in. And although, yeah, I was missing scares here and there now and again, it's not like in the UK, if they put, you know, our style of attractions, if you put conga lines through that, you're going to near enough miss every single scare. At least with Halloween Horror Nights, they sort of double up on certain types of scares, don't they? So if you don't get it on one side, you might get it down the line on the other.
The ones that really bugged me once was I went there when there was... Now, when I go out there, I tend to... I'll go like 2 or 3 times.
Yeah.
And I will RIP it once, and I'll fast pass it a couple of times. I mean, if you're going to spend the money to get out to America, make the bloody most of it, like really go for it. But one time I went there through a cast change,
mm-hmm.
and for half a maze, there's nothing. And I was like, see, that's kind of crappy, because if this was my one night before I moved off to somewhere else, I spent all this money getting in here, over here, blah, blah, and then I missed half it. So I think and I appreciate there's X number of thousands of people, but mm-hmm. I think with something like cast change, you know, it just...
Just stop for 30 seconds, honestly, yeah. Definitely. I was really lucky when I went, to be fair. I didn't see a single cast change. And there was only really one haunt that I felt rushed in, which was Halloween. Like, every time I felt rushed in that one, with people going, move, move, hurry up, quick, quick. But all the others, I seem to have decent runs. And like I said, I similar to you, I did multiple nights. But yeah, I was quite lucky when I went.
I mean, it is luck, because like the Killer Clowns from Outer Space one, being my favourite film of all time, I went through that. I met 12, it must have been 12 times. And only at the last time did I hit every scare.
Right, okay. So yeah, if you're only going on it once, there's a good chance you're missing quite a lot.
With those sort of ones, it is very... Now, this is the only one I've had that experience with, but it's my favourite one. But the point is, it is a lot of it is luck, and it is very easy to miss scares.
Yeah.
Because they have to... And because it is a constant conga line. I mean, it is just if you have the bad luck. But I've had amazing runs there. I mean, I've had absolutely fantastic runs. I've had runs where Jess came out thinking, damn, I literally think I just peed with like, relentless runs. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not pissing and moaning. It is luck, though. Coming down to a lot of luck.
Definitely, definitely. But anyway, we've totally sort of sidebarred onto...
Yes,
Halloween Horror Nights, which is cool. Halloween Horror Nights, just make this maze. Simple. Done. Let's start wrapping up. Have you got anything else on that list of facts about the film that our listeners need to know, or have we covered everything?
I have some fun facts. Yeah. Well, not so fun facts. The guy was actually very, very deathly ill of COVID when it came out. Luckily, he got through it.
Mm-hmm.
But I have some fun facts. That, you know, the Willy's Wonderland... logo that I called the animatronics, not the animatronics, the artwork.
Yeah, The guy,
I forgot to write down the guy's name, like an imbecile, but he actually worked for Hanna-Barbera and used to illustrate the Bill and Ted cartoons.
Oh, cool.
He designed all the artwork. He also designed the arcade, the pinball machine.
Oh, nice.
All the artwork on that. The pinball machine was also all Nicolas Cage. Like, the guy said there were certain rules to filming this film, and one of them was let Cage be Cage.
Nice.
And they said to Nicolas Cage, what do you want to do? And he was like, well, you know, I'd like to go nuts in the pinball. And he said basically he just set up 3 cameras and let Nicolas Cage rock out in the pinball machine and just filmed him.
Nice. That's pretty cool. That's cool.
The Power Punch, which is the drink he gets,
mm-hmm.
which he was kind of talking almost like he said it was like the Popeye spinach can.
Yes.
But that's what gave him the boost of power. That was actually meant to be, it was originally meant to be product placement. They were talking about getting product placement.
Right.
And they were saying that they were trying product placement and they weren't really getting anywhere. And they said they thought about doing Jolt Cola, which was over here every now and then. It's basically very, very caffeinated, cheap, but very, very nice Coke.
Okay.
And yeah, it was meant to be Jolt Cola, but they were just basically working in ins and outs of it. And then he was like, do you know what? I'd sod the money. I actually want something myself. I want like my brand in it. So this is my reality. So created Power Punch, which is the energy drink. In the script, it was actually root beer is what he was drinking.
Okay.
The question, last question for this, it's not a fun fact, it's more of a query, is how long before they make a porn parody of this and what will it be called?
You know what? The worst part is that I'll definitely watch it just to see how they've done it.
Dude, it's furry porn. Yeah. People are furries. That fetish exists. It's people true. Dress up like fuzzy animals and fuck.
That is very
so. Essentially, Nicolas Cage will be the leather-clad dude, and then he'll be fucking furries. I mean, it writes its bloody self.
That's a very good point.
And then
actually,
they might kill a few people at the same time. But also, what are they going to call it? Because the fact is, I think Americans, willies mean something different. Like, I remember the interview with Will Smith on the Jonathan Ross show. And he had a T-shirt called Fat Willies. And he said, what does that mean? He said, Fat Willies is kind of like, it's a cool guy. And Jonathan Ross said, so am I a Fat Willie? And Will Smith went, see, it means something different over here. Uh-huh. So they could call it Willie's Wonderland. And this is my complete porn parody fantasy idea for this film. And they would call it the same, but they'd all be English in it to make sense. Willies means something different because it's English, not American.
That's took some thought. That's some real thought in that. The fact that you've quoted Will Smith on the Jonathan Ross show, you've really thought about that, Dan.
That's actually only just popped in my head. It's my brain works very
quickly. You're right though. It works.
It'd still be Willy's Wonderland, and all. But the thing is, even the mascot. Is it, what is he? He's a stoat or a weasel?
Yeah, I think he's a sort of weasel thing. Yeah, a beaver sort of weasel.
Kind of bloody phallic.
Very true. Yeah, very true.
So, you know, I mean, there's plenty of possibility. You know, I'll be up for. It's not beneath me to direct a porn parody if everyone fancies kicking this off.
There we go. And you know, it might not quite be a sequel, but it's the next best thing. You can develop the story more. See what happens.
How did your career in porn directing start? Well, funny you should mention this.
Started off with a podcast called Scare Track. I say, let's do it. Right, there you go. Next project. I think that hits us with everything there then. I think the only thing I want to sort of end on as well, you mentioned in the what was the name of the pop again? The energy drink?
Power Punch, I think it was
Power
called.
Power Punch needs to be on sale somewhere. Like, yes. Along with the T-shirt. Power Punch will sell definitely. You know what? I reckon people would even buy the pinball machine.
Yeah, it would just be in America though. I mean, like the T-shirts are just so you can get rip off ones, but not like the ringer T-shirts. And I'd want to be movie accurate with this stuff. But it'll just be available in America, not over here, because America gets everything great.
Good point. Yeah, it's the amount of times I've gone, oh, I'm going to go and buy that, and it's always in dollars. And I'm like, oh, well, I can't buy that then. Or you can, or it's going to take forever to get here.
And it costs so much to get over here. I mean,
it's
like 5 years ago, I remember chatting to this American. He said, yeah, I don't know what happened. I used to send my mate in England stuff all the time. And all of a sudden, that they it wasn't only the weight, it was a size. So, like, you'd send someone a box of air would cost $100. It used to be just weight. Said now it's size. So if I send my mate a couple of boxes of cereal, it costs $3. It will cost me $100 to send them purely because of the size. It just went absolutely nuts.
It's mad, isn't it? Absolutely insane. Well, who knows? We can only hope. You know, things might change when it gets fully released. We might be able to get some more stuff, but who knows?
It's quite a fun thing about. I was listening to the director. I liked his logic on the animatronics, where he said if you look at Chuck E. Cheese, the drawings that bug all like the actual characters. So the fact the characters don't look like the drawings was a very purposeful thing, because he said because you look at Chuck E. Cheese animatronics are creepy.
Yes, yes.
And the cartoons, all these, hey, really cool cartoons, which is why he got the Hanna-Barbera guy to design them. But he said the Willy creature, porn parody springs to mind again, looks bug. The Willy
sign. And he said that was completely done on purpose. It's a little in-joke of how badly these type of places actually match the artwork to the animatronic.
That's pretty cool. That's cool. I need to... Was this on YouTube? Did you see this interview?
It's an interview by... I tried to get an interview with him for UK Haunters, and they didn't get back to me, so I'm a little bit salty. But they are... But, hey, man, it was a good interview, and, you know, I got some amazing interviews, so I shouldn't be too salty. But they are called the Boo Crew, awesome. Or Tales from the Boo Crew, I think. But, yeah, they do... They actually sound like super lovely people. I'm just salty because they didn't get back to me about an interview, and I really like the podcast. I was like, but they sound really cool people, and they're always very entertaining to listen to. Yeah, but I think it's a fair long interview. I'm not sure it's 2 hours, but it's pretty long. And yeah, it's definitely worth checking out. Yeah. Just because he sounds like a really nice guy as well.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I'm gonna have to check that out for sure.
Nicolas Cage is a really nice guy. Yeah. And it's just like, it's a very positive story for all this shit that can happen, A, in life and B, in film. Mm-hmm. And everyone just being super positive and sort of going, I like it even more now. Because that's what I like about it. I was going to say this earlier when you were talking about the house of Nicolas Cage. I was very 50-50 on Nicolas Cage. I didn't dislike him. I didn't like him. He kind of existed. Mm-hmm. But recently, I'm loving his choice in films. He's like Mum and Dad, Mandy, Colour of Outer Space. Now this, he's doing, for such an A-list celebrity, he's taken some wild swings at films.
Big time.
And he's hitting every single one. I am now definitely a Cage fan. Like, super. I think he's amazing.
You would definitely get on with my wife and her family.
The thing is, he's such a nice guy. Because this guy who did this film, I don't know what else he did, but he didn't sound like he was... He sounded like he was a player. Like, he's a full-time director. That's his job. But he wasn't like Spielberg, where you've got to, you know, the old super high, super powerful guy. And he said, you know, Nicolas Cage was just nice. He believed in the film, and his agent called him like every week. How's it going? We're still looking forward to it, blah, blah, blah. And he just seemed so super into it and up for it. I was like, see, you're an A-list celebrity. I mean, maybe his agent called and he didn't as much, but he was up for it. They were into it. And throughout the year of messing around, they were always up for it. And I thought, no, it's just a film of such positivity.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And he played the role really cool. Like I say, it really works with it being Nicolas Cage. Awesome. I think that sort of wraps us up quite nicely. Guys, go. If you've already seen it, thank you for watching and then listening to this podcast talking all about Willy's Wonderland. If you've got to the end of this podcast and you haven't seen it, don't think we've ruined it for you. It's definitely worth going to check it out. Like Dan said, you can get it straight on Amazon, $6.99 for a 48-hour release rental, and then it's coming out on the 24th of April too, so you can purchase it. Really awesome, really enjoyed it. Like I said, check out our Scare Track Scare Cam episode on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/ScareTrack, to see mine and Hannah's reactions to our first ever time playing Five Nights at Freddy's, in homage to watching this film and doing this episode. It was terrifying. I ain't doing it again. And Dan, a huge thank you for joining me once again on the Scare Track podcast.
It's a pleasure as always. I'd like to say, anyone wants to do the porn parody, I'm open to reading scripts as of now.
Perfect. Excellent. I'm going to start writing a script.
Unlocked Vision, proud sponsors of the Scare Track podcast. UVE are a multi-award-winning themed attraction and design company, providing bespoke themed attractions, theming, events, and experiences. Contact UVE today by visiting unlockedvision.com. Now, let's return back to the show. And remember, let's get scared.
So there we go, folks. A huge thank you to Dan for coming on to the Scare Track podcast once again. It's awesome doing these movie reviews. It's been a little while, actually, since we did our last movie review. But we are back with a bang with Willy's Wonderland. I bloody love that film, and I want to buy all the merch. I want to buy it when it's on release. It's just an awesome... instant classic in my eyes. So guys, if you've watched it, I hope you enjoyed it too. If you haven't watched it, don't think we've spoiled it, go and watch it now. I really do think you'll enjoy it. Let us know in the comments, either here on this podcast feed, or go and follow us on our social media pages. We love to interact with you guys on there. We are on Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat and Facebook. Just search for ScareTrack. Let us know what you think in the comments. Did you enjoy this film? Is it an instant classic for you? Or were you not quite feeling it? You know, fear is subject to opinion, and enjoying films is exactly the same. So, yeah, if you enjoyed it, let us know. If you didn't, let us know why. That brings us almost to the end of this episode. We've got a few announcements coming up. Just to let you know that we will be on the Theme Park Loopy episode in a few weeks' time. They have just been on our recent episode of Scare Track, so head back in this feed to check that out, talking all about theme parks 2021. And I'm going to be going on their podcast to talk about the psychology of fear within scare attractions. So it'd be cool to check that out. We also have a brand new episode coming up with Dan Afsani as well from Fear Fields. They won third place in our top 10 Halloween awards this past Halloween season for third best scare attraction. So yeah, they are back with Fear Fields, Psychopath, The Walkthrough. Get this, coming in April. That's right, we're only a few months away from a scare attraction opening here in the UK. I'm very excited about that. And we've got an interview coming up with Darren in just a few days' time. So definitely check that out. Remember to check out anything ScareTrack related, just head to our website, scaretrack.co.uk. You can check out every podcast, every scare cam, including our Five Nights at Freddy's scare cam reaction video. And of course, our merchandise on there as well. A few more people have bought some merch. Really, really appreciate that. If you buy anything, let us know and we can put it on our Instagram story and feature you on our highlight. We love it when you guys rep the ScareTrack podcast, and you can get that direct as well on our website, scaretrack.co.uk. Just click on the merch tab and you've got everything from t-shirts to mugs to hoodies to beanies, absolutely everything. So there we go, that brings us to the end of this episode. Once again, a huge thank you for listening and thank you for all your support, and we'll see you next time. Let's get scared.